song about a bunch of guys and women who are inspired by the Bible. In the 1640s, they were inspired by the Bible to chop off the head of the King of England. In 1649, St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlord, they defied the law. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. Come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the land in common and to make the waste ground grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it shall be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder, they took the land. Now everywhere the walls rise up at their command. They made the laws should chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feels the rich while poor folks starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the Lord. Still we are free, though we are poor. Diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now. Yeah. From the men of property, the orders came. They sent the hired men and traverse to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages and destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. In peace, the orders came to cut them down. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down. Amanda Palmer, ladies and gentlemen. The world turned upside down. Leon Russellson wrote that. We had a great time here at the Pace Party. Hope you have. Listen, did anybody film that? Because it was great.
I have one for you.
Oh, yeah.
How much time do we have?
And welcome, everyone. This is Kevin on Eagle Strong Voice. You're listening to Here We Stand, the voice of the Sovereign Republic of Canada. It's June 4th, and that, of course, was one of our theme songs, sung by Billy Bragg and Amanda Palmer, The World Turned Upside Down, about the overthrow of the British Crown in 1649 by the will of the people. Because as the Act of Parliament that lawfully abolished the British monarchy declared on March 17, 1649, it is found by experience and scripture that monarchs are repugnant to God and dangerous to the liberty and well-being of the people, and therefore the office of king is henceforth and forever abolished. And as my own free-thinking ancestor Peter Anna wrote in 1761, just before he was shoved into a prison in London for criticizing the Church of England, the only crown is reason that the people place upon their own heads. Well, as so often happens in history, reason was denied and the clock was turned back when the British monarchy reimposed itself through a military coup in 1660 against the law of Parliament and the will of the people. And since that day, every British queen and king has ruled unlawfully and has no de jure authority to govern. That's especially the case nowadays and since February 25th, 2013, when the British Crown and its partner in crime, the Vatican, were lawfully convicted of genocide in Canada by the International Common Law Court of Justice and disestablished under international law. And now Charles Wilson, Charlie Windsor, who pretends to be someone named King Charles III, now stands personally accused by insiders of ordering the murder of my friend William Coombs, a native man who was the sole eyewitness to the abduction of 10 Indigenous children by Queen Elizabeth at the Kamloops Catholic Death Camp on October 10, 1964. Well, today we're going to be going into what we do about all that. Because here's the situation, people. When you pay your taxes or vote, if you're in a Commonwealth country, or allow this killer to remain illegally on a throne, you're an accomplice in his crimes. So you each have a personal common law duty and a human responsibility not to associate or aid that criminal power called the Crown of England and its sponsor, the Vatican. But on a larger scale, we've got a bigger alternative to simple individual non-cooperation. The alternative has been that in 2015, we established the Sovereign Republic of Canada to replace the unlawful and genocidal Crown Authority in Canada because, under their own law, Magna Carta, the basis of common law, goes back almost 1,000 years. Under Section 61 of Magna Carta, if the monarch injures the rights of the people and breaks the law, all Crown land and wealth can be seized. Now, that gives us a tremendous weapon, a lawful weapon, under common law. And so as free citizens within the jurisdiction of our new republic, that's exactly what we've been doing for the last number of years. But that revolution has been building in many different ways, many successes, many defeats. But the upcoming day in June that we want to celebrate is the 25th anniversary of our first tribunal into genocide in Canadian so-called Indian residential schools that we convened in Vancouver on June 12, 1998. Because the memory of that crime and our grassroots movement that exposed and prosecuted it has been erased by the criminal powers of church, state, and big money that murdered over 60,000 children in these death camps. And because of that erasure, it has been that much easier for the same criminals to impose the COVID corporate tyranny on all of us, a tyranny whose aim is not just genocide of one group, but omnicide, the extinguishing of the human race. And that's why our remembrance of the June 12th tribunal is so important to each one of you listening today, because your survival depends on knowing how and why people have been legally exterminated among us in order to know how to fight that same system. And to know also how we've all been complicit in that crime, but how we can step out of it and out of their whole murderous system. That's the theme in our show and on our movement. And today on Here We Stand, we're going to be helping and preparing you to do that by means of what I call the three E's. By educating you with the truth, by enforcing the court orders that have banished the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches and Crown Authority from our nations, and by establishing our own authority and sovereign republic to stop these crimes against humanity once and for all. For starting next week on Monday, June 12th, our republic sheriffs, deputized police, and citizens will be enforcing the lawful court order of Squamish Traditional Chief Capilano of March 4th, 2008, that evicted the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches from Vancouver and reclaimed their property and lands. You can read all of the background on this at murderbydecree.com, republicofcanada.org, and to be part of that campaign, just write to us, Republic National Council at protonmail.com. Well, on a personal level, the June 12th anniversary strikes close to home for me, because not only the history of that crime has been erased, and the movement that was built that exposed it, but so have most of my friends and the survivors of that genocide been erased, either killed or in hiding. The people who led the biggest David and Goliath battle in Canadian history, fighting against enormous odds to expose and prosecute genocide in our homeland. Between 1998 and 2015, our grassroots movement of mostly homeless Native people forced out the truth of the residential school genocide and forced reparations to survivors. We compelled the July 2008 pseudo-apology by the Canadian government, and eventually in 2013, our movement helped topple Pope Benedict and three Catholic cardinals from power, as well as launching a global common law revolution and new sovereign republics. The spirits of all of those fallen friends and fighters are with us today. Great souls like Billy Coombs, Ricky LaValle, Harriet Nahani, Bingo Dawson, and my adopted elder Louis Daniels of the Anishinaabeg Nation of Central Canada. All of them murdered by police or in the hospital after they confronted and occupied the guilty Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches. Because like those 60,000 murdered children, these brothers and sisters look to us now to complete their fight for justice. We cannot betray their sacrifice, or we'll betray ourselves and our future. And so in that spirit, I'm going to begin today by sharing with you something that's going out this week. It's a public advisory that's going to be released to the world media and governments this week to prepare for our June 12th campaign and that 25th anniversary of our tribunal. It's a summary of the crime and cover-up of genocide in Canada and the history of our campaign that exposed it. It's called Truth and Consequences, a definitive summary of the crime and cover-up of genocide in Canada. It's based on 25 years of active campaigning and research gained from over 300 eyewitness survivors of the residential school death camps, from government and church documents, and even from forensic evidence and children's remains that were unearthed at mass graves in five former Indian residential schools. Murderbydecree.com has all of that. That research and campaign began 25 years ago this June 12th at our public tribunal in Vancouver. And here's the thing. Over those past 25 years, none of this evidence that you hear today has ever been refuted, denied, or challenged in court or publicly by any group or individual, including the people named in our court cases. That means that this evidence and the verdicts against the guilty churches and governments stand as uncontested fact and as the truth under the law. The Truth and Consequences document also includes a section called Targeted for Destruction, the Criminal Conspiracy Against Kevin Annett. And that's a very key document because it shows how this attack on our movement really began with the assault and attempted destruction of my life when I first began to bring out this truth in 1995. All of that will be posted at murderedbydecree.com under ITCCS updates. But let me begin by sharing with you the main points of this document, Truth and Consequences, a definitive summary of the crime and cover-up of genocide in Canada. Let me say, first of all, that as part of this, for those of you who don't know, because the memory has been so effectively swabbed now off the media and the internet, I helped convene the first tribunal into these crimes from June 12th to 14th, 1998, and wrote the final report of that ERM tribunal. I co-founded the Truth Commission into Genocide in Canada in 2001. The Friends and Relatives of the Disappeared in 2005, which was the group that led those occupations and protests at churches across Canada. And finally, the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State in 2010. I served as the advisor to the International Common Law Court of Justice that successfully convicted the Vatican, the British Crown, and Canada for crimes against humanity in February 2013. And I've authored 22 books and the documentary film Unrepentant, which you can see online, murderbydecree.com. Also, you also need to realize that the part of this whole cover-up involves what I remember an RCMP officer, Peter Montague, said early in our campaign when he was talking about the takedown of our movement. He says, take out Annett and you take out the issue. And that's why part of the smear was, well, Kevin Annett is trying to speak for the Indians. Don't forget that it's like a man addressing rape. Men have to take responsibility for what they do to women, just like the dominant culture in Canada has to take responsibility for our ongoing crimes of genocide. So that's one of the things that obligates me. I'm speaking to my people, to all of us, because of this. But I'm also an adopted member of the Anishinaabe Ojibwe Indigenous Nation and the group that gave me the name Eagle Strong Voice. And I also am the acting legal agent for traditional Squamish Chief Capilano in Vancouver. So that actually gave me the right of legal entry and the right to evict these churches. But we're going to get into that. Let me, first of all, as background to that, and I mentioned the background because there are listeners, human rights observers, and judicial advisors that are listening in today from Europe and across North America, Turtle Island, that need that necessary information because part of this recording is going to be used as evidence in the upcoming trials. So, first of all, the background, the summary of the crime of genocide in Canada. Between 1889 and 1996, the deliberate, systematic murder of generations of Indigenous children was committed by Canadian government and the Privy Council in London, the Roman Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches, in special internment camps run by these churches and deceptively called Indian residential schools. Second point. In those camps, over 60,000 children died because from the first year of their operation, the average annual death rate was between 25 and 70%, a genocidal mortality level that was reported in not only 1891, but 1949. For over half a century, really six decades, constant massive genocidal death rate. That enormous mortality was caused by deliberate practice by all the churches that's been admitted in writing and in the press that of all the churches that run these camps, they had a practice of deliberately starving children and housing the healthy ones with the sick, those dying from tuberculosis and smallpox, and then deliberately denying them medical treatment and care. In other words, a regime of institutionalized germ warfare. The explicit purpose of that operation was genocidal, to depopulate the remaining indigenous nations and destroy the foundations of their culture in order to grab their lands and resources. From its inception, this genocide was authorized, perpetrated, and concealed by every level of state, judicial, police, and religious authority in Canada until these death camps officially closed in the year 1996. Next, every crime defined as genocide under international law occurred in these internment camps, including murder, mental and physical torture, starvation, slave labor, systemic beatings and gang rape, destruction of family bonds, sexual sterilizations, medical experimentation, and daily mandatory brutality. These crimes were inflicted on children as young as 4 years old, according, get this, to an officially prescribed death quota and torture regimen established by the churches and approved by the Canadian government. And I know that because in the records introduced in these court cases that we're involved in, they introduce the punishment logs, which in all these different death camps recorded that between a third and a half of the children had to die every year, and prescribed forms of torture to ensure that. Next, the master plan for this whole operation was adopted on November 25th, 1910, at a meeting in Ottawa of senior officials of the Canadian government and the Catholic, Anglican, Presbyterian, and Methodist churches, the latter two churches being the forerunners of the United Church of Canada. That plan was made Canadian law by a special order in council, dated July 1, 1920, that required every Indigenous child be interned in an Indian residential school where their parents would go to jail. These death camps, called residential schools, were explicitly Christian operations run by the aforenamed churches with government sanction and funding. The camp principals were clergymen appointed by their churches who had life and death power over the interned children, since the principals were appointed by the government as a legal guardian of these children in 1929. After 1920, the federal government of Canada assisted and enabled these murderous church operations by abolishing all medical inspection in the death camps as soon as the huge mortality rates were reported. They responded by stopping medical inspection. They suppressed reports of the deaths of children year after year. They denied Aboriginal people the right to vote, to sue in court, or hire a lawyer. They legislated the involuntary sexual sterilization of any Indian residential school child, and they deputized the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to serve as the police arm of these death camps and to use, quote, any means and force necessary to imprison these children and then track them down when they ran away and then secretly dispose of their bodies when they died. Part B, the cover-up. From the beginning, these Christian death camps targeted Indian residential school children for either enslavement or extermination, and they did so under a fog of official church and state deception and secrecy, and behind the false title of Indian residential schools. Reports of the enormous death rates in these camps were routinely suppressed. The murderous practices responsible for these deaths were never investigated or curtailed, and in their entire 107-year history, no residential school death camp employee or church official was ever reprimanded for harming or killing a child, but instead were routinely and officially exonerated by the government and its Indian agents. No one, despite all this, no one has ever been charged or tried in a Canadian court for the deaths of these 60,000 children. Nor has Canada or the churches ever been charged with genocide at the United Nations, despite their having committed all five acts of genocide as defined by the UN Convention on Genocide, which was ratified by Canada in the year 1952. And despite the requirement by that convention that all perpetrators of genocide, including authorities, must be prosecuted and punished. Instead, the criminally complicit churches have been legally indemnified and continue to receive tax exemptions and privileges under Canadian law, a fact that makes every Canadian taxpayer an accessory to crimes against humanity. Since at least 1960, and especially after the first public exposing of these crimes by yours truly and Native Eyewitnesses in September 1995, the Canadian government, the RCMP, and the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches have systematically destroyed the evidence of their crimes and obstructed justice. They have censored and obliterated the records, silenced and killed survivors and whistleblowers, destroyed the remains and mass graves of children who died in these camps, and constructed a false, deceptive narrative that makes it all seem benign and compensatable. This enormous falsification and cover-up culminated in an official whitewash known as the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, or TRC, which was established by the guilty churches and government themselves to misrepresent, conceal, and decriminalize the residential school genocide and thereby subvert and obstruct justice. So the question is, why are these churches still allowed to operate? Third point, Section C, the campaign to expose and prosecute this genocide. At a public meeting in Vancouver on February 9, 1998, the author, yours truly, Kevin Annett, and death camp survivor Harriet Nahani launched an independent grassroots campaign to document and publicize the Indian residential school crimes and eventually prosecute the government and churches responsible. That campaign sponsored the first human rights tribunal into these crimes, June 12 to 14, 1998, in Vancouver, under the auspices of the United Nations affiliate IRAM, the International Human Rights Association of American Minorities. After that event, and based on the evidence presented, IRAM recommended to the UN Human Rights Commission and its Secretary Mary Robinson that Canada and its churches be charged with genocide, but diplomatic pressure from Canada prevented that action. Despite that, over the next decade, I, Kevin Annett, and Harriet Nahani rallied many death camp survivors in an independent truth commission into genocide in Canada, founded in the year 2000. That published the first detailed accounts of Indian residential school crimes, including eyewitness testimonies, documents, and forensic evidence from mass graves. The commission and our offshoots launched high-profile protests, church occupations, and conferences that forced the Christian death camps onto Canada's political agenda. Those actions caused a groundswell of pressure that forced the Canadian government to issue a limited apology for Indian residential schools on July 8, 2008. But by this time, Harriet Nahani had been murdered in prison, in Surrey Remand Prison, and Kevin Annett and the movement censored and shut down by the church and state cover-up campaign that culminated in the aforenamed TRC. Nevertheless, the impact of what Harriet and I began went global. In June 2010, I was invited to Ireland by Catholic Church torture survivors, and we formed the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, the ITCCS. Between 2012 and 2014, the ITCCS sponsored two common law court trials that prosecuted and convicted Canada and its churches for genocide and forced from office Pope Benedict and three Catholic cardinals. These victories rebounded back to Canada and kept alive and legitimated the issue of the Indian residential school mass graves, compelling a new escalating round of church-state cover-ups and public spin campaigns that continue today. Well, the latter part of this report is called The Continuing Crime and Consequences. While genocide historically has been a normative tool of church and state, in Canada it's an institutionalized buttress of the nation. The dispossession and extermination of Indigenous nations has been required by Canada's resource extraction-based economy and its dependence on foreign investment, which today is increasingly from China. China is leading a massive assault on the lingering land-based indigenous communities all over northern BC and Alberta in order to seize the liquid natural gas and oil in that area and populate the region with illegal Chinese immigrants. Indigenous families are being dislocated, assaulted, and killed in the latest round of genocide spearheaded by China and its corporations like PetroChina and Sinopec. This attack is receiving the active support of the Canadian government, the RCMP, and these churches that continue to traffic and murder Indigenous children. Well, as part of China's economic penetration of North America, this recent genocide is being administered by the Aboriginal elites who are among Canada's chief corporate partners on the West Coast. Since 2020, tribal councils have signed oil and gas export agreements with Beijing that exceed $25 billion. These agreements require that the native elites facilitate the Chinese takeover by trafficking their own children and expelling their own people from their traditional lands and denying them housing, jobs, and benefits, thereby hastening their destruction. In effect, China is assuming the genocidal mantle once worn by the British Crown in Canada, with the native bourgeois elite playing the same middleman role in this extermination that they've always done. In other words, Western Canada has become the front line of a massive geopolitical battle between America and China for the control of natural resources and hegemony. Traditional, unincorporated indigenous people are caught in the middle of this conflict and are slated for extermination. But their elimination is the precursor of a similar and more general assault on humanity. The COVID corporate police state, whose methods and statutes are modeled on the genocide of indigenous nations, has been the Trojan horse to usher in a new era of a China-led global corporatocracy that's eradicating not just democracy and the rule of law, but mankind's future. What began as genocide is blowing back now on everyone as omnicide. Now, I'm going to take a short break. I'm going to let you listen to the actual voices of survivors. And this is taken from the videotape testimony we submitted to the International Common Law Court of Justice during 2012 and 2013. That's why when you're listening to this 8-minute clip, there will be breaks, because this is videotaped evidence, which you can see again online, murderbydecree.com under ITCCS archives. After this break, listening to the voices of eyewitnesses, including William Coombs, we'll be back with more.
Irene Favel, I'm 75. I went to a residence school in Muskogee in 1941 to 1949. And I had a very, very rough life. I was mistreated in every way. It was a young girl. She was 7 years old. She was pregnant. And what they did, she had her baby. They took the baby, wrapped it up in a nice pink outfit, took it downstairs. I was in the kitchen with the nun for cooking supper. They took the baby into the, where they make a fire and all that to heat up the school, furnace room. They threw that little baby in there and burnt it alive. All you could hear was, that was it. And you could smell the flesh cooking. It's a big mistake when people say we were treated good. No way.
So after my brother got better, he needed to go back to the mush hole. And we didn't go back for that next year. But it was some time after that, during the time that that we were out of school for the summer, that he had, and we were going to go back. And he said, you know what happened to all of those kids that were there at the mush hole? He said, do you remember that? And I said, yeah. I said, our dorm was just full of girls. And he said, yeah, so was ours full of boys. And he said, do you know what happened to them? And I said, no. And he said, they called in the army and they took them to the army base and they shot them. They stood them all along this big hole and they shot them. And as when the bullets hit them, they fell into the hole. And he said, when they were all done, he said, those that hadn't fallen into the hole, some of them were still alive. He said, some of them were still alive in the hole. And he said, they came along. I want to say a bulldozer. That what comes to my mind, but I'm not really sure that my brother had said a bulldozer. They came along with a big machine anyway, and they shoved them all in that big hole and they covered it up. And he says, that's what happened to them. And I must have been about 8, I guess, or 7 or 8, somewhere through there. Let's see, that must have been 43 or 44.
Here we are, second day of the dig, near the mush hole. And this is an area about 100 yards from the school, where we found consistent bone samples. And these regular types of buttons, probably off of, well, clothing, obviously. But the interesting thing is, here and at the Glebe site, they're of the same style as if they're off a standard uniform or something. Could be a child's button off a school uniform.
scary, finding those little skulls in there. What were those little skulls? Where did they come from?
Could you describe what they looked like?
Tiny little ones. Two little skulls. Tiny baby ones.
And they're in here.
I feel that fear we had running upstairs to that door.
And I spent 5 years in the Canadian government calls it residential schools, but really these were prisoner of war camps. I was one in the one called the Mohawk Institute. Starved us, beat us, froze us, and it was horrific. There was no controls in the place. Kids were always getting beat up or being put through various torture rituals. A lot of the kids were tortured in there. They were made to hang off a hot pipe still. They couldn't hold on anymore, and they just fell to the floor from the roof. And they were beaten. Whenever someone felt like it, made to hold on to electric fences.
And the ministry found out I was pregnant, and they told me to have an abortion. And after I have the abortion, to have a tubal ligation so I won't have any more children. They said if I didn't have a tubal ligation, then I would never see my daughter Patricia again.
Furnace going burning 24/7, which was totally out of bounds, and me and a friend witnessed two of them, the sisters or brothers taking look like little bodies under white wrappings or white cloth, and putting into the furnace. And the Queen came and visited for about 3 days, I don't know how long it was, I think it was about 3 days actually, and a lot of children went missing there. Many children that weren't cooperative, like myself, wasn't cooperative, and they were put into with the children who were sick with at the end of the dormitory. They kept the sickies there, the ones who were sick with tuberculosis, and they put me and my brother Ernie in with the ones who were sick because we wouldn't comply.
In the same room with people who had TB, they didn't separate us.
Then we were forced to play with them. The nuns made us play with those kids. We didn't want to get sick either, but they were forcing us to play with those kids. And also, they made some of them sleep with the other kids.
I would have loved to have seen the perpetrators severely punished for all of this. And I would, the greatest thing I would want to see is Church of England get barred from practicing in Canada.
It's just insane. Like, you don't murder children and get away with it. And I work every day to protect children, and it just really bothers me that so many of our children have been killed. And nothing's ever been done about it. Like, you read about it, and there's information on it all over the place, but nothing's ever been done about it. So why should these people, the churches and the government and Indian Affairs, we're all in on this as well. Why should they get away with killing our children? It's just not right, and something needs to be done about it.
Something needs to be done about it. And we tried, and we met the wall of repression that happens when the criminals are still in power. And then they follow that up with denial and cover-up on a massive scale. So the memory and the erasure is so erased that people don't even remember what happened. And that's why this week and beyond, as we always do, we're going to be showing how this crime has not only invalidated the system, but empowers all of us to take action. And I want to, if you remember from those quotes, and I hope you use this show today and you play it in classrooms and all over the world, to show that throwing children in ovens, shooting them at the edge of ditches, and even forcing sterilization still today on Native women, all that went on and does go on in this wonderful, nice country called Canada. But this last part of the report is entitled Legal, Political, and Moral Consequences of the Canadian Genocide. Under the Law of Nations and the aforenamed UN Genocide Convention, the consequences of deliberate state-sponsored genocide are clear. The perpetrating powers must be prosecuted and punished by the world community. As self-admitted and convicted genocidal powers, the government of churches in Canada and their Crown and Vatican sponsors in London and Rome are criminal organizations that have lost their authority and right to govern or operate. Their officers must stand down and be prosecuted, and their wealth, assets, and properties are forfeit because they're the avails of criminality, and they can be lawfully seized, including by the citizens. The members of those churches and powers are absolved of all duty and allegiance to those bodies, and they must not fund or associate with them. That means every member of a Catholic Anglican United Church, every priest, every clergy, every official must not have anything to do with their church or fund it anymore, or they're guilty of colluding in a crime against humanity. And that's according to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court in 1998 and the UN Convention on Transnational Criminal Organizations in the year 2000. And that's what these churches are, transnational criminal organizations whose rights and money and land are forfeited. Well, the United Nations and its courts have continually refused to enforce their own genocide conventions, and they've allowed Canadian church and state to evade and subvert justice and absolve themselves of intergenerational mass murder of children. As a result, Indigenous survivors of the Canadian genocide and their allies have been forced to apply these international conventions themselves, including through the aforesaid verdict of the International Common Law Court of Justice and Indigenous proclamations, which I'm going to refer to in the latter part of the show. Foremost among these Native proclamations is the eviction and banishment order issued by traditional Squamish Chief Capilano and entered into the BC Supreme Court on March 4, 2008. That order expelled the Roman Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches from Capilano's traditional territory, which encompasses the entire city of Vancouver. Now, a copy of this order will be posted on our material when it's online at murderbydecree.com. But it's important to remember that we used this order, and I know because I was there, I showed it to the police when we began to occupy churches in Vancouver. We used it successfully to get the police to stand down and cooperate during our peaceful occupation and reclamation of those churches and anywhere that we did these actions. It's why we were never interfered with, because the police knew the law was on our side. That's our power. And it also empowered me, Kevin Anna, Eagle Strong Voice, to act as Capilano's legal agent to enforce the eviction and banishment order, including by giving me the legal entry, right of entry into these churches to seize them, seize their properties and assets. It's just a question of acting on the power that we have, folks. And we'll get to that, about how to do that in the latter part of the show. Well, to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the Iram Tribunal that first exposed this genocide, and armed with recent Indigenous proclamations, which we'll name in a moment, survivors and their allies will be recommencing the public seizure and reclamation of the properties and wealth of these criminally convicted churches. And there'll be more details of that next week tomorrow, Monday, June 12th. Stand by for a global press conference and series of actions starting that date, June 12th. Well, the moral and systemic repercussions of this genocide that's become omnicide and the required disestablishment of its perpetrators are profound, because as the chief American prosecutor at the Nuremberg trials, Robert Jackson, observed, quote, "The wrongs which we seek to condemn and punish have been so calculated, so malignant, and so devastating that civilization cannot tolerate their being ignored, because it cannot survive their being repeated." Well, having been repeated time again and again in Canada before, during, and since the Nazi era, These same genocidal atrocities by Christian churches have condemned all of us unless we uproot the institutions, the ideologies, and the allegiances that are responsible for the massacre of the innocent. In a nutshell, that means you have to stop attending these churches. You've got to help us reclaim them. You've got to stop paying taxes to a criminally convicted Canadian government under Crown authority and keep those taxes in your community. It's part of the program of our new Republic of Canada. That requires as well a radical cleansing that begins within each one of us, since we are all part of an historic and inherent group crime that's carrying on. And so we've begun that transformation by personally separating from these criminal churches and states and enforcing the law that evicts, banishes, and reclaims them and their wealth, their lands and properties, anywhere in Canada under our own sovereign jurisdiction, specifically under the common law of republic assemblies and courts that we've been setting up across Canada. We are making that separation permanent by creating these new political and spiritual associations that conform to the requirements of the law and natural justice and replace the old genocidal regime. To do anything less is to be an accomplice to ongoing mass murder and to stand condemned alongside the killers of generations of children. Now, this statement, the Truth and Consequences, is going to be issued a week tomorrow, Monday, June 12th, as a global media advisory. And it will be entered, along with other material, into the dockets of various courts around the world as part of new legal actions that are going to be enforced now with our sheriffs and other police who have been deputized for this, as well as peacekeepers and international observers who will be coming to the west coast of Canada especially to support us in this work. So you can contact angelfire101 at protonmail.com or Republic National Council at protonmail.com to be involved specifically in that. Now, I want to share with you as well other material that's in this release, in the appendix. One is the eviction of an appointment order issued to me on March 4th, 2008 by C.M. Capilano, Jerry Capilano, who actually was there the day that William Coombs and me and 50 other people went into Holy Rosary Cathedral, March 17th, 2008, and reclaimed it. He was there, and he issued 4 years before that this eviction order against the churches and the one giving me the legal right of entry into all of them. The problem hasn't been that we lack the lawful authority to do it. The problem is we don't have the numbers of people to stand with us because people are scared. Even atheists are scared of taking on these churches. And you can call a protest on any issue and get hundreds, thousands of people. But on the issue of genocide of children by these churches, you'd be lucky to get 5 or 10, traditionally. We have to change that because it's a canker of an ongoing crime that's destroying us from within until we wash it clean through our personal and collective action. And as part of these documents, there's also something else that was issued on August 19th, 2022. It's called the Two-Row Wampum Proclamation Against Canadian Churches. It was a proclamation of banishment and confiscation issued against the Catholic, Anglican, and United churches by more than just the Squamish elders. These were elders from the Ahouset, the New Chalmouth, the Chilcotin, the Cree, the Métis, the Anishinaabeg, Huron, Mohawk, Haudenosaunee, Mi'kmaq, Dene, and Inuit peoples across Canada. Standing on their landlord jurisdiction, they, according to the Great Law, it says, we the elders assembled at Council Fire proclaim that these churches and their agents are hereby and forever banished from our nations, anywhere in Canada. They must immediately depart or face arrest by our peacekeepers. The properties, assets, and lands now owned by these churches anywhere in Canada are forfeited and confiscated by our people as reparations owed to us by these churches for stealing our lands and for the genocide committed against generations of our people. This proclamation authorizes our people and peacekeepers to enforce our decision by immediately evicting these churches from our nations and arresting those who will not comply, and by seizing and occupying all of these churches' lands and properties and assets. We offer this proclamation to our Indigenous relatives across Mother Earth and urge them and other nations to take similar actions against these genocidal churches, especially the Church of Rome, which is everywhere in the world. This proclamation reclaims our stolen lands and fulfills the prophecy of the great peacemaker Daganoweda, who foresaw that our lands would be invaded by a two-headed snake from the east, who would fool and destroy many of our people, but would one day be killed by our sacred fire. We are killing that Vatican snake, and by the way, folks, that's what Vatican means, serpent, and reestablishing the great law of balance that unites all free and sovereign people within the eternal circle of existence. We place our names and guiding spirits to this proclamation and call for it to be read and enacted across sacred Mother Earth. We endorse the disestablishment of these churches according to the order of C.M. Capilano of March 4th, 2008, and we name Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice, and others in the International Common Law Court and the Republic of Canada as peacekeepers for our nations. Again, this was issued at Council Fire in the Eastern Woodlands on August 19th, 2022, and communicated to our Republic of Canada liaison officer, Gano Geshiwe Gikido, which is my name in Anishinaabeg, Eagle Strong Voice. And the third piece of evidence is, of course, the International Common Law Court of Justice verdict of February 25th, 2013, which under international law found, I call them the Dirty 30, 30 defendants, including the Queen of England, Joseph Ratzinger, the Pope, who stepped down, Pope Benedict, three other cardinals, and heads of churches and governments across Canada, found them all guilty, convicted them to life imprisonment without parole, and all loss of authority. It's one of the things that prompted the formation of the Republic of Canada, because without any lawful authority, Canada needed a new government, and that's exactly what we're creating from the grassroots. So these are some of the lawful means by which we can act. How we are acting? Well, excuse me, I've got to rest my voice a bit here, but the verdict and sentence banishing these convicted churches that seizes all their property and gives us a legal right of entry is not just a thing a nice idea. It's a legal requirement, a moral requirement, as we've talked about in the document. How we do it? Well, first of all, through direct actions, and those are ongoing. One of the things we've done is in Vancouver, if you go down to the corner of the scene of the crime, Richards and Dunsmuir, you'll see a big Catholic cathedral called Holy Rosary. That's the one we occupied and seized and banished in 2008. And right across from it is a park that a number of years ago we reclaimed and renamed the William Coombs Memorial Park. And people love the homeless and others who we've encouraged, they begin to camp out there. And there will be actions there at the William Coombs Memorial Park to start to, again, this reclamation process. Because, folks, the entire city of Vancouver has now been legally handed over to us under the law. And we know it's a law because the police stood back when we showed it to them. Now, as part of that, there'll be delegations going to the Vancouver City Council saying these churches have been nullified and the land is now under the authority of the Indigenous Nations and the Republic of Canada. Therefore, you, the City of Vancouver, have to nullify all church licenses and all tax exemptions for these criminal churches or your accessories to convicted criminal bodies, and you will be tossed out at the next election. So people anywhere in the world can and should do that. I know that our friends in Australia and America have done that. They've gone recently to city governments and said it's time to nullify the tax exemption, especially to the Church of Rome, or your accessories to a crime, and we'll remember that at the next election. That's hitting politicians at their weak point, which, of course, Sun Tzu says you always do, strike at an enemy where they're weak. But we've also notified the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and all Crown officials to stand down and aid us in the enforcement of these court orders through deputizing. We've already done that successfully. We've gotten police to stand under our authority and either stand back and not interfere or actively support us. And those are some of the means that we're taking in action. Now, of course, there's also church actions where we go in, we lead the information, we get up and give them impromptu talks in the church saying you're part of a criminal conspiracy, this church has been forfeited, you have to leave, go and worship elsewhere. And we find when you do that, you see the churches are so sensitive, they know they're guilty. They have an enormous guilty conscience and they can be easily provoked. And we find even if one or two of us do this, it evokes a tremendous response and gives us a power way beyond our numbers. We prove that. There are only 24 of us who forced this issue across Canada, forced out the truth of genocide. It wasn't numbers that did it. It was strategic position. And doing what Sun Tzu says in the Art of War, you don't rely on people or numbers. You rely on seizing the chi, the essential energy or strategic situation, striking at the right moment. and place, and we have that right moment and place now once again. So we do that. We do all these tactics, and we literally, when we build up our numbers, we go in and reclaim these churches. Now, we found in the past the best way to do that is by finding the people who have nothing to lose, because the first argument you get from people who have any means in this world is it going to be threatened by what I do? We find that the homeless, the people who have already been targeted, and that's why the natives were such great allies in this and still are, is because they have nothing left to lose. They are the ones who occupied these churches. They're the ones who have been leading this campaign. So find those kinds of people. I know, for example, our sister Georgina Cameron in Australia has been going in single-handedly to these churches, and she's been assaulted. A 69-year-old woman, at the time on crutches, was physically assaulted at Lumen Christi Catholic Church in Wollongong, Australia, by the church goons, and ordered by the Archbishop there. And we've got more of that, those examples of that, how the power of even one person acting on the truth, saying no to this ongoing genocide, it gives you a power way beyond your means. Because don't forget, this is a spiritual battle we're in, and we have great unseen allies. I knew that when one of the things that hasn't been mentioned, but will be, of course, is when I was in Rome, October 11, 2009, I did an exorcism ceremony right at the Vatican in St. Peter's Square. Not touched or bothered by any Vatican official, which was kind of interesting because they normally jump on any kind of demonstrator. The next morning, a tornado hit the center of Rome, and that week, the European media began to report for the first time these crimes. So there is a power behind us that we can't calculate but works through us and blows away this corruption and this criminality, but only when we have the courage to act first, and then it acts through us. So I want to urge people to remember that all the time. Well, finally, in the last 5 minutes, I want to talk briefly, and we ran out of time again, but we'll do it more next week. What is our long-term alternative to this? Well, it's as we've said, a personal reclamation, a spiritual reclamation, and a political one. And maybe the political one is the easiest. It's the Sovereign Republic of Canada, which had to come into being because the Crown and Canadian political authority was lawfully, morally nullified by its conviction. And, as we mentioned earlier, by the fact that in 1649, the British Crown was lawfully deposed by Parliament and the people during the revolution in that country that created the English Republic. So our alternative already exists within Canada, in Canada, but around the world, too. We've sparked what's called the Republic Alliance. We've got groups now in over 11 countries, on last count, who are setting up sovereign republics, breaking out of the corporate system, which, as we know, is not based on law, but ruled by decree through administrative tribunals, not common law courts, not accountable authorities. And that Republic Alliance is actively building that alternative. It's really our answer to the global corporatocracy, because we talked about omnicide earlier. That's hitting all of us. The eradication of human liberties and human life by this corporate machine, this COVID technocratic, bioweapon-based regime that's destroying humanity. And we are in an omnicide we all must resist. Well, the alternative that we've created are these sovereign criminal republics. So again, to be part of that in whatever nation you're in, write to Republic National Council at protonmail.com. And there's also a very important book folks can read. It's called The Case for Canada. You can get that along with all my books at amazon.com. Just put in Kevin Annett, A-N-N-E-T-T. And Establishing Liberty, The Case for Canada, outlines the program for replacing Crown authority. And especially you might want to read in this program the section on church and state, how we nullify all churches that were involved in the genocide. We nullify all tax exemptions for churches, separate totally religion from civil society. And so that's something that people need to read to look at the long-term alternative to this. And finally, I want to remind folks that next week there will be actions all over Canada, William Coombs Memorial Park, Monday, June 12th. Be there at 11 a.m. The local Indigenous people and others will be holding a press conference announcing the beginning of this reclamation campaign again. So in Vancouver, that's next Monday, June 12th, 11 a.m., a press conference and service there at the William Coombs Memorial Park at Richards and Dunsmuir in downtown Vancouver. The next day, Tuesday, 9:30 a.m., go to the Vancouver City Council meeting. There will be a petition to have them stand down from any support from these churches, nullifying the tax exemptions and Vancouver City licensing for the Catholic, Anglican, United Churches. And there'll be teach-ins throughout that week and beyond, reclamation picnics, sit-ins at these churches, and other ways to reclaim the country for all of us. Elsewhere, of course, anywhere in the world, there can be direct actions and teach-ins that are being planned, and you can follow all of that, murderbydecree.com, republicofkanata.org. Now, under murderbydecree.com, go to ITCCS updates. That'll have all our latest news. republicofkanata.org, just look, breaking news. And you can write to me, Kevin Hannity, to go strong voice, at angelfire101@protonmail.com. Now, we are especially thankful for all of you new listeners today, especially the human rights observers and peacekeepers from the different indigenous nations and around the world. We welcome your arrival during the summer on the west coast of Canada to help expose and stop the ongoing genocide by China and other corporate powers against the are all of us, but especially the surviving Indigenous nations. And we're going to go out on another great song, which we like, and it's Farewell to the Crown, because don't forget, it isn't just a matter of undoing them. They're already undone. They do not exist. The crown, monarchy of any sort, whether it's secular monarchs or religious monarchs, like that idiot in the funny hat in Rome, they don't exist under the law of God and mankind. And so, with that, this is Kevin Ant at Eagle Strong Voice. I thank you for listening. Please use the show today and post it widely as a teaching tool for bringing more of the people into our movement to reclaim Mother Earth and our own minds and hearts and bodies and lives for ourselves and for the future generations. This is Kevin Ant at Eagle Strong Voice. I thank you.
To the crown, goodbye to the royal wing.